Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
From 90.9 WBUR, I'm Tiziana Deering. This is Radio Boston. Coming up, it's Friday, which means it's time for our Week in Review, and you can feel the joy spreading as more and more folks get vaccinated, including Governor Baker.
I gotta tell you, it's a real shot.
But experts and leaders are still urging caution as we approach what could be the home stretch in the race between the vaccine rollout and the fast-spreading variants.
Countries where high levels of immunization have been reached are seeing declines in cases, but we are not there yet.
Despite the progress we're making as a nation, I want every American to know in no uncertain terms that this fight isn't over.
On top of all that, could Democrats' massive infrastructure proposal be headed for the finish line?
This is a moment. This is a moment for us.
And acting Mayor Kim Janey is officially running. The race is on. Next on Radio Boston's Week in Review.
Thanks for listening to the Radio Boston podcast. If you'd like to support WBUR, go to radioboston.org and click the pledge button in the upper right-hand corner. Okay, back to the show.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering, and it's Friday, which means it's our Week in Review. Boy, the race is on this week on a whole bunch of fronts. More than 1.5 million people in Massachusetts are fully vaccinated. Governor Baker himself is on his way.
I got my first dose today, and so far, I feel great.
But the fast-spreading variants, folks, have led leaders and public health experts to urge folks to continue to be vigilant.
Clearly, the variants are moving very quickly.
But we all need to hold on just a little bit longer.
This fight isn't over.
Meanwhile, in the nation's capital, Democrats are trying to push a $2 trillion infrastructure proposal across the finish line with a seal of approval from here at home.
This is a moment. This is a moment for us. Not only in Massachusetts, but across the country, to really try to make a once-in-a-generation improvement to our infrastructure system.
Also this week in Boston, acting Mayor Kim Janey throws her hat into the race.
I will continue to lead with a racial equity lens, a lens around justice and around love.
And we finally get a timeline for the investigation of Boston Police Commissioner Dennis White.
We do expect that that investigation will conclude in the coming weeks, this month.
So much going on, so much to get into, so let's get right into it. And you can jump on board, join the conversation on all of it, starting with vaccines at 800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Or you can tweet us at Radio Boston. Let's bring in our Week in Review panelists this week. We have Reverend Mariama White-Hammond, pastor at the New Roots AME Church in Dorchester, and Charlie Chippio, a senior fellow at the Pioneer Institute and principal of Chippio Strategies. Reverend Mariama, Charlie, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Good to be here.
So apparently I need to ask the two of you to wish me luck with my enunciation this week. We'll see if I can get it a little better as we go along. And listeners, we want you to jump in here. Questions for you, listeners. Have you been vaccinated? How about the people around you? Did you become eligible this week? And so if you did, is it still a struggle getting an appointment? 800-423-8255. Reverend Mariama, Charlie, it feels like this week was all about races, towards, away from things, for things. But let's start with vaccination. The state estimates nearly 1 million more people eligible this week. What are you hearing, Reverend Mariama, in your neighborhood, in your community, about where we are in the vaccine rollout?
Yeah, so I've been pretty engaged around this. I was part of the Moderna study, so I've been vaccinated since October, and I've been part of the groups really trying to move people. I'll say I see a lot of people who were vaccine hesitant now being willing to get the vaccine, which is a good sign. And we've made a lot of progress. I think we've done a lot of good work, particularly in the Black community that I've paid attention to really get folks out, to really get a lot of folks vaccinated, have seen the health centers and places like BMC that have prioritized some of our most vulnerable communities, really doing an amazing effort to get people vaccinated. I am concerned that a lot of the folks in the Latinx community have not yet been vaccinated. And I feel like we need to make sure there's a lot of attention and support to make sure that community is vaccinated.
What would you call out as the most effective strategies for an approach like that, Reverend Mariama?
Well, one of the things is that up until now, we've had to do all this sorting about who's eligible and who's not. And I've had instances where you're trying to reach out to a family and some people are eligible and some people are not. What I'm really excited about is now that everybody's eligible, coming on Monday, that we'll be able to just say, actually, everybody, let's all get in the van. Let's go down. Let's make sure you can all get vaccinated together. Let's get you a family appointment so that your whole household will be protected. And I'm hoping that the open eligibility is going to make it just a little bit easier for those of us who have had to sort through people's conditions to figure out whether or not they were, you know, right or not.
So a couple things on that. First, the full eligibility is Monday, April 19th on Patriots Day.
Sorry.
That'll be people. Yeah, that's OK. People 16 and older. I feel like, Reverend Mariama, the Mondays are all running together in the strange passage of time. So, Charlie, then we also have just, you know, a new rush this week. Lots of new people eligible. I want to play a little more of Governor Charlie Baker getting his first dose. Here he is.
I got my first dose today. I pre-registered. Was notified last week that I was now eligible to make an appointment, and I did. And so far, I feel great.
So, Charlie, I got to admit, I'm glad he feels great, but what I cued in on was the one-week turnaround between when he found he was eligible for an appointment and when he actually got one. What are you hearing from people about, are we actually getting better in timeframes and getting an appointment? Because I'm still hearing a lot of agony on that front.
Yeah, I mean, I'm hearing mixed things. I'm hearing some people who are doing it, you know, pretty easily without a whole lot of trouble. But then I'm hearing an equal number of people who are still just, you know, really struggling with it. It all sort of brings me back to, you know, when I was a kid, you know, in the 70s and, you know, Springsteen was in town and you had to like hit the phones the instant that the tickets went on sale and you just had to like pound away at it until you got one. And it sort of brings me back to that. I think there's a lot of people. I think there's definitely a difference between those who are more who are more technologically sort of capable, who know ways to sort of make this process a little easier, as opposed to people like me who don't have a clue, for whom it's a little bit more daunting, I think.
And listen out there, listeners, if you are someone who scheduled an appointment this week or became eligible this week and is trying to schedule an appointment, we'd like to know what your experience is. 800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. So, Reverend Mariama, I want to come to a piece of what Charlie just said. And I've been seeing commentary in social media this week as well about there are so many backdoor ways to get this vaccine right now. If you happen to be able to be someone's plus one, or if you're at the right place at the end of the day, or if you know someone who knows someone where there's some surplus that day, plus the formal channels. And I wonder from that perspective, I mean, Charlie also just pointed out, you know, if you're tech savvy, you can get one. There's lots of bots and aggregator sites designed to help people now, volunteer groups trying to help people. How are we doing on the equity of access just around signing up?
Yeah, I mean, I think definitely early on, there were some real challenges. What I can say, at least from my lived experience, is as people began to call out concerns about that, at least what I saw in my neighborhood, because I'm from Dorchester, we are one of the more hard hit neighborhoods within Boston, is that in general, providers who had already been supporting and working in those communities started adjusting to figure out how can they make sure that people who needed it the most were getting access. But I do think, you know, because all of the eligibility was always just a little bit challenged, like, oh, are you just overweight or are you considered obese? You know, these kinds of things, you know, I'm not saying that that was a bad way to go, but it did definitely add to some of the challenge in terms of making sure everybody who should be getting the vaccine was getting it in a timely way.
I think that's right. I also think that, you know, invariably when you have to make these calls, like this, there's really almost no good way to go. I mean, any way that you sort of go about this, especially when you're sort of trying to put it all together on the fly, there are going to be problems. But I would agree. I think there was a lot of problems at the beginning. And I do think that there has at least been, you know, a real effort that has shown some results to learn from those early mistakes and try to improve the process.
I did notice earlier this week, one of our producers, Hafsa, was trying to find for us the information on when you, how you qualify as a smoker. And she had to navigate 7 levels down through web pages to get to that. And I actually don't mean to sound hypercritical. I'm just trying to think about this from the perspective of a person who's got 8,000 things going on in their day. And now this becomes one that really takes a lot of time and discernment and work. And at the same time, as Charlie says, Reverend Mariama, is there some way we could have been making it easier?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things that I'm really glad that we eventually did, I'm not against the mass vaccination sites. The site at Reggie Lewis did not start off as the most culturally sort of competent, but has really worked with people to get there. I think when they reversed course on, you know, really putting hospitals and health centers at a much higher capacity, that was really, really key. Because those are the folks I saw doing the most work to sort of figure out how do we get to the hard to reach folks. And I will tell you, I've seen people never be so thankful they gained 10 pounds to be obese as opposed to overweight ever before in my life. But I do think it was a little bit of a challenge to negotiate all of those factors, because sometimes people didn't really even know where they exactly stood. It did get a little bit more flexible over time, you know, so that was helpful.
Yeah, I want to flag something you just pointed out too, Reverend Mariama, because on Monday we're putting together a conversation to talk about this use of weight, this very difficult use of weight, and especially body mass index, which there are scholarly studies to say it's not a good proof of health. And it's caused lots of angst and conversation, both positive and negative, this week around how body mass index gets used, how one determines it for oneself, and what that means for something like eligibility. So you're raising something we're going to talk more about and take some calls on Monday. I want to go to the phones here now. We've got a couple calls with personal experiences, 800-423-8255 to add your voice. Let's grab them both. We've got Eli in Andover. Eli, go ahead.
Hi. I just wanted to let you all know about a great tool that I've found that's helped make it very easy to find appointments. And that is actually on Twitter. There's an account called Vaccine Time, @VaccineTime, no spaces. And it's a bot that some community members have created that will release and notify you anytime there is a vaccine available that comes available anywhere in the state of Massachusetts. And just by following that, you'll get multiple notifications throughout the day of anything that comes available. And I really think it's a great resource a lot of people should know about.
Thanks, Eli. Thanks for sharing that resource. I admit I do follow it, too, to see where the information comes in during the day. Ellen's on the line from Lowell. Ellen, tell us about your experience.
Well, my husband and I were looking at doing it. I'm 3 years younger than him, so I just became eligible on Monday. And we've been looking at different places. We called the pharmacy, and our branch of the Walgreens didn't have it. They were saying some of the other ones did, and they weren't sure. We called the Lowell General Hospital, and they said, well, you can leave a voice message, but it's best to do it online, and the online is just complicated. I left a voice message on Wednesday, and they called back on Wednesday and said, well, okay, you're ready to go in on Tuesday, the 13th. And we're like, okay, well, we'll see what we can do. My husband's working from home, and it's sticky.
Did you get it worked out?
Said, well, there might be some possible openings for today. And they called back later on in the day, and we got to go in.
Look at that, Ellen. So you've had a shot.
We've had a shot, and it was a one-dose Johnson & Johnson. So we're done.
Good for you, Ellen. Thanks for sharing that story. Ellen, that's great. Thanks for sharing that story. Charlie, I hear you wanting to respond there.
No, I was just going to say, I love when the low-tech wins. It's so rare. It feels so good.
Yeah, it does. And just before we go to a break, Reverend Mariama, Ellen also pointed out which shot she got. Do you feel like the conversation about vaccine shopping has fallen by the wayside? Have we all embraced the message, whatever you can get, you should just get?
I think many of us have. I think I have had folks that I was trying to help get vaccinated who only wanted one kind or another. You know, most of the time, I think I was able to convince them to just move forward. But I do think, you know, I heard a good piece actually in NPR today about the fact that some of the folks who are vaccine shopping are also the most hesitant. And I think we may need to get to the point where to help those people get over the line, we may need to oblige some of these concerns, but I don't think we're at that point right now.
And I also wonder if as the balance shifts and there's more vaccine available, if people are going to feel like they have the luxury of being more busy about it. I don't know. We'll see.
Welcome back to Radio Boston's Week in Review. I'm Tiziana Deering, and the race is on this week, whether it's the race to get people vaccinated or to get an infrastructure bill passed or for the mayor of Boston. We're talking about all of it with our panelists still with us, Reverend Mariama White Hammond of the New Roots AME Church in Dorchester and Charlie Chipio of the Pioneer Institute. Thanks for still being here. And listeners, we're going to talk for a few minutes now. The race is against the vaccines and the spread, and we do have some worrying trends in spread, so we'll talk about that. Do you know someone who is sick now? Is there spread happening in your community? How are you thinking and feeling about that? 800-423-8255 is the number. Reverend Mariama, Charlie, I'm going to start right off with some sound. We talked with Dr. David Hamer, who's a BU professor, at the beginning of this week, and he was pretty honest with us about the spread of the variants in Massachusetts. Here he is.
P1, the Brazil variant, has been identified in quite a number of people, primarily on the Cape. And then B117 has become dominant in many parts of the state. And so they clearly the variants are moving very quickly.
So the B117, significantly more infectious, and in the UK, it's proven more deadly. He went on to talk to us a little bit about this race between vaccinations and their state reopening and this spread. Here he is again.
Countries where high levels of immunization have been reached are seeing declines in cases, but we are not there yet. Instead, we're facing a competing impact of new, I think, variants of concern. As well as perhaps, the economy opening more and more gatherings, in restaurants and other public places that might facilitate transmission.
Reverend Mariama, are you worried?
Yeah, I think it's concerning. My husband just mentioned to us that someone we know was supposed to get vaccinated this week and then got diagnosed 2 days before they were supposed to get their shot.
I'm sorry.
So this is, it's real. We got to still stay vigilant. It's something I'm, still reminding my parishioners about. I've also been talking to some of my vaccine hesitant people who think, oh, well, let everybody else just get vaccinated and then I don't have to, So we really have to keep pushing our folks to hold in and really do what we need to do, because these variants are in many instances even more deadly than what we've already faced.
And I think it's really telling that we've got about a quarter of the state fully vaccinated, and yet the hospitalization numbers are continuing to go up. I think that says something about just how virulent these variants are.
Should we be scaling back? We went to phase 4 of reopening a couple of weeks ago, March 22nd, actually. Should we be scaling back? And can we at this point, with the weather getting warmer and so much open right now?
Yeah, look, I don't think scaling back is realistic at this point. I think it's a little bit like Pandora's box. We've all been so repressed for so long. I just don't think anybody's going to want to walk up to the podium and say, I take it all back. I think that maybe the more hopeful thing is that the weather is getting better and that, we can hope that people can, will spend more time outdoors. But really the hard thing is, and I got to tell you, I find it hard just even making myself do it. But the hard thing is that it's, we're 90% of the way there, and we just have got to be vigilant for this last little bit.
Reverend Mariama, do you think it makes it harder for people to be vigilant when, I don't mean this whiny, I mean it's a genuine question, when some don't have to be? Those who are vaccinated, the CDC is giving them far more degrees of freedom. Does that sort of loosen us all up? Is that a challenge for us?
Yeah, I faced this specifically in March. I'm a scuba diver, I've been diving for 20 years, and I found a cheap trip and I said, let me just do it. I went. And I was shocked by how many people were in the airport. I was concerned. And as a person who has, some level of protection, there were a lot of people that I knew could not have been eligible to have the vaccine. So I think it is still really concerning, because I think it's some of our youngest folks who most want to get out there haven't been eligible up to this point. And I do worry that they'll engage in some behavior that is that could lead to more super spreaders.
And that's the population that where we're really seeing increases in the, you know, in the people coming down with COVID right now.
So I'm going to take us in a new direction now. That there's a lot more that we can always talk about. We talk about COVID-19 and this pandemic pretty much every week on Week in Review, because it's sort of like the water in which we swim at this point. But I do want to take a couple of minutes. Oh, and by the way, listeners, several have called today with questions that are really perfect for our Ask the Doctor segments. We are planning another Ask the Doctor segment next Tuesday. So if you have questions about eligibility and availability, et cetera, next Tuesday is the perfect time to do that. We will have an Ask the Doctors. So Charlie, Reverend Mariama, I want to talk for a couple of minutes about the infrastructure bill. I know it seems like a pivot, but we do have the rest of the world continuing to go on and try to move us forward. And President Joe Biden is really pushing this infrastructure bill. We had an interesting conversation with Representative Stephen Lynch this week. He thinks this is a big deal for Massachusetts. Here he is talking about it's just too good to miss.
This is a moment. This is a moment for us, not only in Massachusetts, but across the country, to really try to make a once-in-a-generation improvement to our infrastructure system.
So, you know, I tend to think of infrastructure as this big national thing, Charlie. How important is this bill to the Commonwealth of Massachusetts?
Oh, God. I mean, it's hugely important to the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. I mean, look, look at the MBTA. We've got a $10 billion maintenance backlog. You know, we've got more structurally deficient road bridges than you can count. This is a huge deal for Massachusetts. Absolutely. I think it's a very big deal for places, like Eastern Massachusetts that are very heavily populated, relatively speaking. And I think it would be great to see this happen. I think it's going to be a tough one. I think it's going to really require some negotiation and some deal making, because I think that on its face, this is going to be a little tougher than the relief bill that recently passed.
So I want to underscore what you just said, Charlie, with some more sound from Representative Lynch from Wednesday, talking about basically us having some of the oldest infrastructure in the country. Here he is.
We're one of the oldest, probably the oldest in the country in terms of rapid transit and our infrastructure, right? We've got some bridges that are very, very old. They've been rehabbed several times already.
So Reverend Mariama, he's being clear about the stakes there. And one of the reasons we talked to him this week is he's been part of a group in the congressional delegation that's weighed in pretty heavily on issues here in the Commonwealth of late. For example, he took on the MBTA service cuts head on, and the MBTA switched gears after the whole delegation pushed back. I wonder, do you think we are seeing stronger ties between the congressional delegation and what they're trying to do in D.C. and what they see as the issues on the ground post-pandemic when the stakes are so high?
Yeah, I mean, I think the reality is we've done a lot of emergency work, but we've got some things that have been piling up. As Charlie says, there's bridges, there's roads. There's the fact that our state has a pretty significant coastline and is very climate vulnerable. And so we have a bunch of people out of work who need to, I'm glad people are getting the unemployment support that they need, but I bet you they'd rather have a good job that they can get paid and take that home to their family. And then we can also get done a lot of things that we need. We've got a housing crisis in this state. We've got a lot of vulnerability to sea level rise. There's so many things that and food insecurity, it has been laid bare in a way it never has before. Why are we gonna ship in food from Iowa when we could be growing more food right here? So I think our delegation really has got a lot of unity and connection and is being forward thinking in a way that it shouldn't just be Massachusetts. We're not the only state struggling. We're not the only place where people wanna get back to work, and we got some work that needs to be done. It feels like a no-brainer. Now, whether or not that moves as such in Washington, where it feels like everything's been politicized, it's going to be a tough slog. But I think regular, everyday people in their communities see what needs to be done. And I think if we can get leadership, like the delegation we have here in Massachusetts, to recognize this is an opportunity, maybe this can move forward.
I'm Tiziana Deering, and still with us are our panelists, Charlie Chipio, Senior Fellow at the Pioneer Institute and Principal of Chipio Strategies, and Reverend Mariama White-Hammond, pastor at the New Roots AME Church in Dorchester. The theme this week is The Race is On, and this last little part of the show, we're going to focus on Kim Janey's race, both to get as much of her agenda done as she can as acting mayor over the next several months, and her decision to enter the formal race for mayor this week. So, Charlie Chipio, I'm going to start with you. Acting Mayor Kim Janey has come out of the gate strong. Blitz of announcements, lots of initiatives in just these first couple weeks, and then an announcement that she's running 2 weeks in. Is this flurry of activity what you expected?
Well, I don't know if it's what I expected. I will tell you that it has certainly, from a political point of view, been executed flawlessly. I mean, I think that you know, you only get one chance to make a first impression, and I think that you know, for those people for whom, you know, this is a first impression, she's done a very good job, both in terms of, you know, substance, having a lot to say, and also, I think, tone, which is very important. And I think she's done very well so far. And just by the fact that, we call it Kim Janey's race. I mean, she has really put the spotlight squarely on her.
So, listeners, what's been your reaction these first couple of weeks? 800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK to share your thoughts. Reverend Mariama, we haven't had a lot of acting mayors in Boston's history, but basically at least one per generation. Is she rewriting the rules for what an acting mayor is and does?
You know, that's a good question, because I know that Mayor Menino started off as an acting mayor, but I was kind of a little too young to remember. I just remember when he won after that. So I think, I think that... again, what she gets out of being the acting mayor is an opportunity to show people concretely, not just who she is, but what she would do. And, I agree with Charlie. She's come out strong in terms of putting that message out. And now she has really the next 5 months to deliver and show people what she will do. So we'll see how that goes.
Charlie, let's talk about one of her new initiatives, one she launched on Tuesday, the All-Inclusive Boston, which is a travel and tourism initiative. Earlier this week, Colette Phillips, who is a co-developer of the city's campaign, joined us on Radio Boston to talk about what it's about. Here she is.
The real Boston is all of Boston. This campaign is really about encouraging an equitable recovery by attracting a broad cultural diversity and connecting our downtown to the city's vibrant, culturally rich neighborhoods.
So this was actually launched back under the Walsh administration last fall. One of the interesting moments this week has been, Charlie Chipio, that former Walsh administrator John Barros noted that he was actually the one that granted Colette Phillips the contract on this, but it came out this week under Kim Janey. Do you see this as promising to sort of rewrite who gains from the tourism industry in Boston?
Well, look, I think it's very basic. I think that whether it's, you know, tourism or whether it's, you know, who wants to play for Boston sports teams, Boston's reputation as a city that is not welcoming to a diverse range of people is not good for Boston, you know, and anything that we can do to sort of chip away at that and to change that perception is a very positive thing.
Reverend Mariama, here is Acting Mayor Kim Janey on Tuesday with us.
The spirit of Boston is a city that when things are tough, you know, residents come together to support each other. And we've seen that launching the HOPE campaign today and the all-inclusive campaign yesterday, and really focused on tapping into our collective joy and resiliency as a city, I think is so important.
I was really struck by that idea of collective joy. And in talking with Colette Phillips and looking at the all-inclusive campaign, the idea that this is creating a sense of a unified, diverse, and whole Boston. I don't want to ask if we're ready for that, Reverend Mariama, because we need it. What are the next steps for that?
Yeah, no, I think that really over this last year, I've seen a lot more conversation and a lot more reckoning in Boston. I think now a lot of folks got to put their money where their mouth is. And I think You know, we need to see the business community really mobilize to attract talent, to compensate talent, to invest. There are times, for instance, I have a visceral feeling when I go to the seaport because I look and I go, wait a second. How did you create a whole new neighborhood in 10 years that has more resources than the neighborhood I've lived in my whole life? And those are the kinds of decisions. That's the kind of thing that really needs to start shifting. So I think this is an important start. I think it is part of signaling to the world that we have changed. It is part of recognizing that our city council is more diverse, more female-led than it ever has been, that there have been shifts and changes in our congressional leadership. We have our first Black female mayor. Lots of things have shifted, but they are really just the beginning. There's a lot more work to be done.
So, Charlie, one other issue that I want to touch on this week, Boston Herald columnist Joe Battenfeld pushed on Acting Mayor Janey this week to address police reform, especially by settling the question of Boston Police Superintendent Dennis White. Here is Acting Mayor Janey on GBH Radio talking about the investigation timeline.
We do expect that investigation will conclude in the coming weeks. This month, that is what we do expect, and I will be reviewing that report to see what it says. I don't know what this report will show, so it's important that we do see what the report shows so that I can make an informed decision about the future.
And just to remind listeners, just shortly after becoming appointed as superintendent, the Boston Police Department and the mayor put White on leave after some old allegations of domestic abuse that had not been, that we didn't know more about, surfaced and went under investigation. How important is it, Charlie, that she wrap that up quickly?
Well, I think it is important that she wrap it up quickly. I mean, look, the allegations themselves were, they're pretty disturbing. I think that it needs to be, fully vetted and a decision needs to be made based on the facts. And I think it's very interesting. The other kind of thing related to this that's going on is this idea of how much of the sort of internal police investigation materials are going to be made public. And, I also think that not only do we need to have a decision made quickly, but it needs to be fact-based and for it to really have, for it to really have credibility with people, I think it needs to be transparent as well.
Reverend Mariama, I'm going to go to Hubbubs in a second, but before we do, I wanted to give you a chance to add your voice on this too.
Yeah, I mean, I think this will be, again, another test about how we move from marching in the streets saying we need police reform to making that real in a day-to-day basis. I think that this will be one of her first tests of how she handles what I'm sure will be a somewhat complex issue.
All right, let's leave some time for Hubbubs now. Those are those local stories that caught our attention this week. Charlie, did you bring us one?
I brought one. I got to say, I am an inveterate dog lover. And so it just made my week this week when I came across in the Globe an article about Bay, this Basenji who had gone missing in Framingham in 2016. And 5 years later, because of a complaint from someone here in Needham who said, well, this dog's coming into my yard and going to the bathroom, they captured the dog. He happened to be wearing a microchip. And it turns out that this dog had survived on his own through five New England winters. And after five years of being away, was reunited with her owners in Framingham this week, which I think is just, I just loved it. I thought it was great.
I love animal hubbubs. That's great. Reverend Mariama, how about you?
Okay, well, quick shout out to the Pied Dog Walker, who other people may have already seen, but he has great photos.
Yeah.
But here's, my hubbub is super close to my heart. 50 years ago last night, my parents met on the steps of St. Paul's AME Church for the first time. And 50 years ago today, my husband was born. So today is probably like the most important day in my life for being on this earth and finding the partner that I love to spend my life with. So shout out to my parents and shout out to my husband, who's probably going to be annoyed with me that I told everyone it's his 50th birthday. But that's my hubbub for the day.
That's great.
Oh, yeah, and I'm going to tank mine and instead just take a second to say your parents, Reverend Mariama, have been people I have loved and been close to in my professional life and have been wonderful role models in our community for a long time. And so I'm going to give them my love on air, too, and a shout out to them. That's a great way to end the week this week. So, Reverend Mariama White Hammond of the New Roots AME Church and Charlie Chipio of Pioneer Institute, thanks to both of you for joining us for Week in Review this week.
Thank you.
Great to be here.